Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the looming crisis in Korea between the world's overwhelmingly nuclear-armed military superpower, the United States, and a delusional failed state that may or may not have a few deployable nuclear weapons, North Korea, with Secretary of State John Kerry warning to Pyongyang that the U.S. will not accept North Korea as a nuclear state. A veteran CIA operations officer, Robert Baird, joins us to look into the minds of North Korea's leaders who have seen Gaddafi give up his nukes and lose his life, and Saddam give up his WMD only to have his country invaded in search of them. Robert Baird has an article at Time.com, North Korea's Gaddafi Nightmare. Then we'll assess what kind of advice the president is getting from his national security and foreign policy team that is largely comprised of democratic liberal hawks, all of whom, except Obama, supported the Iraq War. Roger Morris, who served on the senior staff of the National Security Councils under both Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, joins us to discuss the imperial preening as the White House appears to be overcompensating in their reaction to the saber-rattling of a boy tyrant they refuse to speak with. Then finally, we'll examine Friday's federal court ruling allowing greater access to the Plan B so-called morning-after pill. While moving in the opposite direction, there appears to be a renewed war on abortion across the country as North Dakota, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Kansas pass laws banning and restricting abortions in defiance of Roe v. Wade. Sharon Levin, the Director of Federal Reproductive Health Policy at the National Women's Law Center, joins us to discuss the state of reproductive freedom in America. And joining us now is Robert Baird, who is a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. He has an article at Time.com, North Korea's Gaddafi Nightmare. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baird.
It's good to be here, Ian.
And in your Time piece, you point out that if North Korea is looking at Gaddafi, who gave up his bomb and lost his head, the lesson of – I'm just quoting here from your article – the lesson of Saddam's end is another cautionary tale for the North Koreans. If Saddam held onto his weapons of mass destruction, and lots of them, the Bush administration would have had second thoughts about invading his country. So I take it in a way that you could also extend that to Iran, could you not, Robert Baird, given that the talks, the P5+1 talks in Kazakhstan over the weekend turned out to be fruitless, and a lot of people are conjecturing that Iran has also learned the same lessons that North Korea has appeared to have learned.
Well, yes, I think you can look at North Korea in any rogue state, and they can go along with the program as Saddam's. I mean, Saddam essentially disarmed by the mid-90s. He didn't have anything to speak of, yet we went and invaded, and he did lose his head. You know, it's a lesson to any tin pot dictator that we are not going to play by the rules that we've established. And you, especially Iran, I mean, what are they, you know, they are, you have to look at them as almost right now is under siege. They're losing in Lebanon. They're losing in Syria. Iraq is on the verge of breaking up. You know, the Shia crescent that everybody was talking about is falling apart. And now, on top of it, come sanctions and promises. You know, they look at them as empty promises, is if they give up their nukes, if they stop enriching uranium, things will be fine. You know, they don't trust us, frankly. And for good reason. You know, and that's where we are now. And Kim Jong-un is the same way. I mean, he has referred – I wrote that article from people who know what's going on and go to North Korea all the time. He has brought up the Gaddafi example of he did disarm. He went along. He helped on terrorism. He helped with renditions and so forth. And yet when it came time for the regime was under attack, demonstrations, we helped assassinate him.
So what do you think, though, of what the U.S. government is doing in terms of handling this situation on the Korean Peninsula, where it appears that we have sort of gone along tit for tat with this delusional boy tyrant who may or may not have some deployable nuclear weapons, and we are, after all, the world's leading superpower, outspending almost half of the countries in the world combined with enormous military power. The asymmetry is extraordinary, yet if you watch the news and hear what the White House is saying, you would think that North Korea was a clear and present danger.
Well, it isn't a danger, and it's worse than not a danger. It's the North Koreans could be counted on to overreacting. They should have known this. As I wrote in my article, every single car accident, so I'm sure this is an exaggeration, but this is what people say, ends up in a fist fight. The Koreans don't give up. They're looking for a fight, and I think it's almost inevitable we're going to get one. But we treat the North Koreans as a poor relative. And yes, they are crazy, and yes, the leader does live in a bubble, but that's all the more reason to keep channels open and not, making ultimatums. On top of it, we don't have experienced people dealing with Korea. The commander of ground forces showed up to their command, essentially threatening North Korea, unprovoked. He said, we'll make a stand if we have to. It was a very bellicose arrival, as I understand, that the North Koreans noticed. And then you have a Korean-American ambassador who is a political appointee, is not really on strong political ground. So we've seen from the Obama administration, there's certainly no, at the beginning at least, no attempt to tamper this conflict down.
Well, I think worse than that, Robert Baer, last Tuesday, Secretary of State John Kerry meeting with the South Korean Foreign Secretary in Washington said that the United States will never, and warned the North that they will never accept them as a nuclear state. Well, that's never going to happen as far as the North's concerned. That's what they put all their eggs in that basket. They've impoverished their own people, many of whom are starving, in order to get nuclear weapons, if indeed they have them.
This is what we don't get, is that the regimes like this are only interested in survival. They're surviving outside invasions, Chinese interference, Russian interference. The United States bringing them down one way or another, and because they are paranoid and isolated, all they care about is staying alive. And they don't. If people starve, they would prefer they didn't, but they'll still sacrifice them in order to keep going.
So I'm speaking with Robert Baer, who is a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. He has an article at Time.com, North Korea's Gaddafi Nightmare. One of the things that troubles me about this situation on the Korean Peninsula and the way that the White House appears to be handling it and the press and by extension seem to be sort of beating the drum as they did with the Iraq War and with the Gulf War. It reminds me, or at least what I'm afraid of here, is what happened in November of 1983 when the Soviet Union almost went to nuclear war with the United States over Able Archer 83, which was a exercise that NATO did every year. And NATO's doctrine, of course, was to have preemptive nuclear strikes against the Warsaw Pact predicated on the idea that the Warsaw Pact had a preponderance of conventional weapons. So That was our policy. The KGB were watching for signs that we were about to launch. All of the NATO leaders went off to their bunkers. They were waiting for final confirmation that Reagan had gone to his bunker. And we almost it was worse than the Cuba crisis, but nobody knew about it at the time, and very few people know about it today. So, and it's all based upon perceptions, how the other side perceive you. So that's what we don't seem to get. Reagan got the message. That's why the hawk became a dove. He realized what was going on, and it changed him overnight. But I don't see that kind of realization and recognition amongst the liberal hawks on the Democratic national security team that surround Obama.
No, they keep making the same mistake over and over again, misjudging these second-tier powers like North Korea. They cannot conceive that they would take irrational actions which would lead to their destruction. They feel they have to bring the temple down, or at least go right up until then. But really what I think we're talking about here is no one wants to go to war. So war with North Korea would be devastating in so many levels. It's the accident. You know, every time on the demilitarized zone, you know, an American soldier puts a new belt in his machine gun, pops off three or four rounds, the Koreans answer with a dozen. It's just inevitable. It's always happened. Is an incident like that going to happen in North Korea? People are more scared they've been in a long time, people who watch North Korea. So, I'm not sure that all the bluffing is going to lead us to a war, but an accident might.
Well, you mentioned, Robert Baer, that the new U.S. military commander of the 30,000 U.S. troops that are essentially the tripwire there on the DMZ, that his remarks were bellicose and unhelpful.
It's a whole generation of military officers that marched into Baghdad in 2 weeks and say these are paper tigers. We can take them down. But no one is yet to contend with the destruction that ensues after a war like this or the unintended consequences. And that was the bad thing about Iraq. Not only did we invade the wrong country for the wrong reasons, but made a calculation of what this has cost us. It's incredible. I mean, it's like, and I'm going to have to say something about the drones in the Mazzetti article in the New York Times. We essentially killed people so that we could get overflight rights for the drones in Pakistan. And it's this kind of imperialist mentality, that we can get away with anything because it's the war on terror, is going to lead to some sort of widespread conflict or some other sort of catastrophe that we're going to pay a lot more than we have been in the past. It's just going to happen.
Well, in this case, we literally have 30,000 Americans there as a sort of tripwire, and then you've got the possibility of hundreds of thousands of South Koreans dying they're on a hair trigger on the north side. As far as I know, all of the artillery tubes and rockets are literally ready to go. And if you've been watching the footage from North Korea, they, as odd as it may seem to us, they really do see this young leader as their god. We may make fun of him, but they take him very seriously, and they take their threats.
Whatever they are, and don't ever forget, we run wars off intercepts. With North Korea, they know how to go radio silent when they're ready to move. They can launch rockets. They can move tanks. They can do anything they want without any spike in communications. It's amazing what they've learned to do. This is an army that's sophisticated in its own way, but could make an incredible surprise, when they want at their choosing. Could ultimately go be defeated, but at what cost?
And there's 1.1 million active in their army and 4-point-something in their reserve. So it's not small change. Now, just in the last few minutes, I'd like to ask you a couple of other questions since you spent so much time in Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon. Secretary of State Kerry just met with his Turkish counterparts and he warned Iran that the American patience wasn't endless in terms of these fruitless talks that went on in Kazakhstan. And I take it that, you know, the North, that the apart from the fact that there's an election going on in Iran, that basically they're looking at the same situation as the way the North Koreans are looking at it. But what about this idea that somehow we're trying to patch up the relationship between Israel and Turkey? Is that happening, and is that a precursor to something happening in Syria?
No, no one knows what to do with Syria. There is no solution to Syria right now. You know, the chance to choke off arms, to reach some sort of agreement, to, you know, actively participate in getting rid of Bashar al-Assad, not that that would have made a difference. That's long past. I mean, we are at a Somalia-like situation, which, you know, I'd served in Syria. I think it'd be very sad when that country is, as the destruction continues. I don't, you know, there's nothing that Turkey can do about it. There's nothing that Jordan can, you know. Unfortunately, the only people doing the real fighting are the Salafis, and they're the ones likely to come to power, in, for at least for a while. I don't think they're unified. You know, the only thing you can do is talk. But as far as the Israelis and the Turks securing the sarin and VX, they can't do it. You just have to keep their fingers crossed that a truly crazy bunch doesn't get them.
Well, apparently, there's within the opposition. There have been stories recently of the Salafists, the al-Nusra Brigade, shooting at people from the Farouk Brigades, which are the secular guys of the Free Syrian Army. So there's already been incidents of fratricide amongst the Free Syrian Army umbrella. But my understanding is that the recent Arab summit meeting in Doha, where the Syrian opposition took their place there and was seated in Syria's place, or Assad's place, I should say, that it broke up because there's a lot of acrimony between the Saudis, who are supporting the Salafists and sending their young dissidents who get out of jail free card to go and fight jihad, as they did in Afghanistan. But on the other hand, you've got the Qataris who support the Muslim Brotherhood, and apparently the Saudis and the Qataris are at loggerheads. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's these Muslim Brotherhood arrests through the Gulf, and the other Gulf countries accused Qatar, and Qatar is also, don't forget, is arming and funding Salafi/Muslim Brotherhood groups in Iraq, and there's a competition, as you said, between Saudi Arabia and Qatar. They despise each other, even though they seem like, you know, they hold the same ideology. But I mean, the unfortunate thing is that just a lot of money and weapons are being dumped into these conflicts, and it includes Libya, Tunisia, Algeria, and you know, this is just going to be a long, long slog before this all gets out of people's systems. I just, you know, we're talking 20 years, and the outcome, anybody who says they can predict it doesn't know what they're talking about.
Well, I that's a good note of caution to end on. And I thank you for joining us here today, Robert Baer.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Baer, who is a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. He has an article at Time.com, North Korea's Gaddafi Nightmare. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking about how the White House appears to be overcompensating in their reaction to the saber-rattling of this boy tyrant they refuse to speak with.